It's kind of funny, and in studying and preparing for this part, I realized I had a couple of books that dealt with nothing but the 13 letters that Paul wrote. You know, God used Paul to pen 13 of our New Testament letters. And there, I have two whole books, and that's not exhaustive, that just argue back and forth about where was Paul when he wrote this, and what was this, and what was this, and that's all they talk about. They said, well, he didn't even write this one. I mean, just kind of crazy stuff. But just the letters themselves, the 13 letters, whole books are consumed with the idea. Sometimes we kind of take it for granted that God has handed those things down to us. And as we're going to see today, Paul didn't just write them all before. I believe there was a first imprisonment, then a second imprisonment. He was released, and that's what we're kind of going to look at, because enough people ask the question as to why we didn't just quit last week. But it does remind us that God is still in control. One of the things I was reminded of this week, I was listening to a podcast of Jordan Peterson. It was actually his first book. It's the more difficult of all that he's ever written, Maps of Meaning. You don't want to start right there, all right? You want to read one of his other ones first, and might not even want to go there on those. But what impressed me was it took him 15 years to write the book. But somebody was interviewing him over it, and he said, yeah, if you know anything about Jordan Peterson, if they interview him or whatever, when somebody says something, he says, that's not what the word means. You know, that's not what the word means. And then they'll go past. He said, no, get the word right. It's important. You say the right word, understand what it means. He said, that's a problem. And what he said was, it took him 15 years to write that first book, and he said, I had to rewrite every sentence in the book 50 times before I could get it right. Wow. He said, I was pressed upon early because I used to, you know, and people do this all the time. They read something somebody else says and they hear something and they just spew it out there. They don't have any ownership of it. They don't have any experience with it. And he said, you can't do that. That's not the way that works. I don't own that. I can't say that. And he said, I learned early on, I better be real specific with my words. And if you know anything about his deal in Canada about this whole gender issue, and he said, you ain't going to make me do that. You know, that's not constitutionally right. That's where he got all his notoriety from. He's brilliant. But he said, words are important. And boy, that's what stood out. These letters that Paul, they are still very, very important for us today. And God went through all this stuff, I believe. He's released out of Roman prison that he's spending in Acts chapter 28, these two verses. This is where Luke leaves it here, the last two verses. He says, he's in prison in Rome, and he abode two whole years in his hired dwelling and received all that went with unto him. Number one, Luke never said he covered everything that Paul did. He just hit the highlights. He's kind of narrating the way things went. Preaching the kingdom of God and teaching the things concerning the Lord Jesus Christ, and with all boldness, none forbidding him. And that's where it leaves it. So in order to try to say, okay, really, what happened? You got to go outside of Acts or any place in the Scripture. There are some hints that Paul makes in his letters, because what we understand clearly is some of these people that are dissecting these letters, you understand. When he wrote the prison epistles, 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus, the situation was totally different in his life. When you just look at what he wrote, you know, when you're in the middle of something and you write a letter to somebody, if anybody's paying attention, they can tell your circumstances by the tone of your letter, right? If everything's going great, it carries a tone. And if things are on the bottom, it carries another tone. Would y'all agree with that? And that's exactly what some of the scholars have been saying. You know, those three cannot be written in the same context that the other nine were. You know, his life was different, and a lot of it came from that. But also we have some extra stuff. I'm going to just refer to it. First Clement and the Muratian Canon that refers to it and talks about these things that within 30 years of Paul's life, Clement was writing this, so he would have surely had firsthand information about exactly what was going on. But we have to step outside of it to try to see exactly what happened. So that's what we're doing. You say, well, that's just a lot of technical, but it's a point of it. Sometimes you have to go farther to try to find out. And when you understand, God did all these things because he wanted those letters to get to us today. And we have them. I want to read something. This is kind of Paul's mindset. John Chrysostom, John of Antioch, he was a 5th century bishop in Constantinople, and they called him Golden Mouth because he was a great preacher. But he got in trouble because he was preaching against the emperor's wife. You don't talk about the president's wife, right? Hello? Unless it's true, then you talk about him, right? No, that's not the way that works. They'll lock you up if you say anything against the president's wife. Well, he said that. And you know what he was saying? She's living too extravagantly. That's all he said. Well, they said, oh, you can't do that. So they exiled him. And I'm going to read this. He wrote it to a friend. He said, when I was driven from the city, I felt no anxiety. But I said to myself, if the empress wants to banish me, let her do so. Send me wherever you want to. He says, the earth is the Lord's. He said, he's in control wherever I'm going. If she wants to cut me asunder, I have Isaiah as an example. If she wants to drown me in the ocean, I've got Jonah to think about. If I'm to be thrown in the fire, the three men in the furnace with Daniel, hey, I have them. If I'm cast before wild beasts, I remember Daniel in the lion's den. If she wants me to be stoned, I have Stephen to remember, the first martyr. If she demands my head, let her do so. John the Baptist shines before me. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I'll go. Wow. Those people, just like Paul, had integrity and stood for what was right, and they suffered for it. We don't really know what that is yet, but that's who Paul was. He was in prison. He's all kinds of things. Quickly, all right. The New Testament, it doesn't tell us how Paul died. It just doesn't. You can't find it anywhere. We find some hints about things that were going on, and we're going to hurry through this as fast as we can. If y'all can listen faster, we'll try to do that, all right? It doesn't really tell us anything past what he said. Well, he was in Rome 2 years, and then he preached freely. That's basically all of it. Some believe Paul's career ended at that point. The trial went badly, and that's why Luke didn't talk about it. It's speculation. We don't know. We don't know that. That's what some of them say. Some take the position that he was released from this first Roman imprisonment. That's where I stand after looking at all this evidence. I always thought that already. But what you find, some of them try to say that, you know, the reason he was let out was because there was a statute of limitations, and if you don't have the case listened to in 2 years, you have to let him go. Well, there's no proof of that. But can you imagine how long it would take a nobody like Paul going to Rome to go before the president? How long it would take to get him there? You think the first day he came in town, the next day they say, oh, the emperor wants to see you. So it would take a long time, at least 2 years. We know that because that's exactly what he said. So there's evidently a break where he's released from this Roman imprisonment in chapter 28 of Acts. And then there's a break in time there before he goes back to prison again and is killed under Nero. Nero was the emperor everybody agrees, liberal or conservative or whatever, theologically, everybody understands. Nero was the emperor who had Paul beheaded. So there's a five-year span that a lot could be done that Luke just didn't talk about. Some sources like First Clement, okay? How close is he? He's just 30 years from Paul. Paul dies in 67. He's writing a letter to the church in Corinth in 97. You know, it's crazy, isn't it? Oh, we can't trust that. Who questions the Iliad of Homer? How far is it from the time it was lived out to the first copy we have? 500 years? Nobody questions that. Here's within 30 years. A lot of this, the New Testament, that's exactly what we have. These things are recorded and written down within 30 years of the lifetime that it was actually happened, but everybody questions it because they don't want to know what it says. You know, that's exactly what's going on. And the Muratorian Canon, which was, it was a compilation in maybe the 4th or 5th century of all the New Testament books, and it was just named after the guy who discovered it, but they give evidence of that, that they say that Paul worked in Spain during this time frame would be about 4 or 5 years. And they say that. And they're living there. We have no earthly narratives that talk about that. Early narratives, Luke didn't talk about it. Why didn't he? It didn't happen before then. Pretty much basically is why. Eusebius was he wrote a church history, and he was on the scene. This is what he says, saying that when he visited the city a second time, so he's in Rome, he leaves Rome, he goes all over these things, writing some of these other letters, and then he comes back. He comes back a second time. The best evidence of Paul's release is 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus. That's what I said. When you read those letters in comparison with the other 9 letters, you look at it and say, wow, If you're very perceptive, you understand he's thinking, I'm not going to make it out of this one. He doesn't say that in the early letters because he writes to Philemon. He says, I'm about to come and make a house ready for me. He's in his first imprisonment, and he's indicating that there's a good chance I'm going to come see you. But whenever he's writing in 2 Timothy, what is he telling him? He said, you need to come see me because I'm fit to be gone. So evidently, the circumstances totally had changed from all kind of perspectives for Paul. And you just can't set these three in the context of the other nine that he wrote. So evidently, there had to be a freedom, a time span that he works, and then he's in prison again, and then he's killed. The details in the pastorals, 1 and 2 Timothy, Titus. You know, it's crazy. Everybody tries to impress something on everybody, right? A few years ago, they found some Egyptian papyri, if you call it, where, and they said, this guy studied it and said, you know, all these things were written just for this individual. They were not written to the group. So they try to come to these three because it worked in Egypt. They said, oh, Paul never meant for all these three to be written to everybody. Were you there when he wrote it? How many thousand years ago? Just because the Egyptians did it that way doesn't mean Paul did it that way. I mean, you wouldn't believe how crazy some people. Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? You know how crazy people are today, right? You know, that's one of the things Peterson was arguing in that talk. And some of the people that interview him are very hostile. Have you ever heard of, some of you have heard of his interviews. They're very hostile, but he doesn't hold back. I remember one of the funniest ones, and I've said it before, but man, this guy from Britain, he's a, I don't know what you call him, he's a young so-called know-it-all, and he has this communist book in front of him, and he's doing all this stuff, and he asked something about something, and Peterson said, do you clean your own house? And the boy looked back. I mean, he wasn't even 30 years old, probably. He looked at him like, what you asking me that for? He said, no, do you clean your own house? He said, no, I don't clean my house. He says, if you can't clean your own house, how are you going to fix this in the world? And when he goes back to all these things and maps and meanings, he says, all these people go back and said, oh, yeah, well, communism didn't work, but if I'd have been there, it would have worked. He said, no, it wouldn't. And what he basically says, from all of creation, man is a bad person. And you would have done just as bad had you been there. He said, communism didn't work then, and it'll never work. Why? Because the premises of it. When you start analyzing it, it's just not going to work. Socialism doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work. You might be a socialist. You never had to live under a socialist government, have you? Go live under a socialist government and then come back and say, oh, yeah, it really works. Hey? Hello? I'm being political now. I'm sorry. They had to be written in a different circumstance for Paul. Go back and read them when you get home. It won't take you 20 minutes. 1st, 2nd Timothy, Titus, and then read one of his other letters, and you'll see, absolutely, there's a different world with Paul. He's going through a lot of different stuff, and he's at a different place. That's exactly what Clement does. Clement is in Rome 30 years after Paul, so he knows the context of everything that's going on when he writes. 1st Timothy and Titus would have been written in a farther period then Acts 28 puts Paul in prison in Rome. It just doesn't work. You just can't set it in that context, and it works. And that's one of the good of the things, these guys that study all these linguistic things, some of them are off, tires are already run off, and they're crazy, but some of them stay on track. You know, you can go either way. You can do it a right or wrong way. The details in these is still a later period than the first Roman imprisonment. That's in Acts 28. His prospects were far more ominous in 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus. What does he tell him? He says, hurry up and get here before winter. You know, pretty much what is he saying? I don't know if I'm going to make it out of this thing. And he doesn't. You know, Nero kills him. He beheads him. The opinion on the subject most widely held among scholars is that the other epistles, Philippians, Colossians, Ephesians, Philemon, were written during the period of Paul's life at Rome at that first imprisonment. Then you have him freed. You have some time frame when he's going to Spain and these other places, and these other 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus are written. You just can't fit them in there. They don't work. So in that, when you start putting all this together, we kind of see, okay, Paul probably did have a second imprisonment. The epistles to the churches of Thessalonica, Corinth, Galatians, Rome were written on his previous missionary journeys that we read about from Acts chapter 1 all the way through Acts chapter 28, in that segment, before he went to Rome and while he was in Rome in prison, whenever he wrote some of it. They presuppose a period of activity subsequent to the imprisonment at Rome. Gordon Fee, and I'll put it on the, it'll be on the thing, He kind of lays out a, Gordon Fee is a good conservative scholar. I'm not sure he's still alive. We used his books 30 years ago. I think he's still alive. But he kind of lays out a plan. This is the way probably Paul was moving. This is where he was when he did this. And he talks about, and we see those in the book of Acts, and this is what happened. So he kind of lays out a path that he thinks this is the way Paul was working and moving, how these books were written. And it'd be on the webpage if you want to see it and see how he does it. And the Philippians written during his first sojourn in Rome, probably about 62 or 63, when Paul got there on the first imprisonment, anticipates that the captivity will not be prolonged and he's going to be released. Look what he says in Philippians. He's writing. He says, I trust the Lord that I myself shall come to you shortly. What does that sound like? I'm about to get out of prison. I'm going to come see you. Doesn't sound like he's going to be over, as he writes in 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. Whole different mindset, right? Again, writing to Philemon, under the same circumstances, he says, prepare me also a lodging, for I hope to come. What does that sound like? I'm about to get out of prison. I'm going to come see you. Doesn't sound like he's going to stay there, so he's out. Shall I be granted unto you? All these anticipations, you say, well, that might not be true. No, might not. But you notice one thing, the whole tone of Paul's letters, when he's writing these, absolutely changes. What is that? Because his whole circumstances are different. When people are happy, they write a happy letter, right? Most of the time. And when they're really depressed, what do they write? If they write, it's not positive. It's doom, despair, and agony on me. Y'all remember that? Where did I quote that from? Hee Haw. Some of you are looking around, what's Hee Haw? Go investigate it. That was back in the days when TV was worth watching. You know, even though it was a fake donkey on it. It breathes through the spirit of resignation and martyrdom when he's writing this letter. Just read it and think about it. You know, think, what's the mentality of what he has here? We don't usually stop and analyze anything that much. If we even read it, we just kind of zoom through it. Was he granted freedom? The New Testament exactly does not tell us exactly. We got to find something else. The letter of Clement, the bishop of Rome, wrote a letter to the Corinthian church in 95. From 67 to 95 is what? Less than 30 years. So he would have the facts together. He would have known what has happened. So he's writing. And there's a passage in Clement 5, it says this, pointing out the prize of the patient endurance. After that, he had been seven times in bonds and been driven into exile, had been stoned and preached in the east and in the west. He won the noble renown, which was the reward of his faith, having taught righteousness unto the whole world and having reached the bounds of the west. That's what he's writing to the church about Paul. Stuff that he knew about Paul, Luke evidently didn't know about. And he's there, just 30 years after, in Rome, where Paul was. And when he had borne his testimony before the rulers, he departed from this world to the other place. He witnessed to Caesar, which is Nero, then he's killed. He goes to heaven. It's significant when you remember the date, 95. Paul was killed maybe in 67. And the position of the writer in Rome, a bishop. He would know what's going on. Hey, that doesn't mean anything. There are people in government don't know what's going on. But I think they would be a little more cognizant of what's going on then, right? Isn't that right? The Bishop of Rome writing less than 30 years? So we're stepping outside and we're picking up some stuff that we didn't get anywhere else. The phrase seven times, Paul, we know he was in bond seven times. Don't really know. We can't interpret what that means. Was it really seven times or is he speaking generally? But here's the issue. Having reached the boundary of the West, that's a big deal. When you look at where he is, when he says West, what does that mean? The place where the words were written was Rome, under whose dominion was now Gaul, Spain, Britain, Rome itself. Whatever might ever have been Asiatic was certainly not to a Roman the furthest western limit of the empire. In this sentence, he distinctly implies that Paul had extended his missionary labors toward the western boundary of the civilized world to a place that kind of expedition like. You know, some people, and they speculate, some of them that try to calculate, they say Paul would have walked farther in all of his journeys than a Roman general. Boy, we saw he did go all over the place, didn't he? And a lot of it was on foot. Didn't ever talk about him having a horse or a donkey. You know, he was on the water some. It's plain from history that Acts had not been traveled farther west before the year 63. So for Clement to say, oh, yeah, he's gone there, that's a whole new world. He's going to a whole other place. He's got to have time to do that. He appealed to Nero was the occasion of the first Italy when he showed up. It seems Clement knew of some further journey because he's there, what's happened, and within 30 years of it, that we don't get anywhere else. His testimony is emphatic. He had the best opportunities of knowing the facts about the situation. He's there, and he's there within 30 years of it happening. You know, how do we know that George Washington was he our first president? A lot of people say, oh, no, he wasn't even our first president, was he? And he was a male chauvinist anyway, right? Everybody just wants to rewrite all the facts. How do we know that? Somebody was there and they were a witness, and we read about it. That's how all this comes down. You have an eyewitness. Somebody was there who knows within 30 years of what's going on. I know some things that happened 30 years ago. I believe it's true that I wasn't there right on the spot when it happened. Same thing. He mentions the journey of Paul to the utmost limit of the West as if, man, we don't know anything about that. I ain't never been that far before. See, and that's exactly what he's talking about. He's a witness for the release of Paul. All of what he says almost has to say, Paul was released from prison in Rome and freed for a while, and then he was arrested again. So what happened to him? The second imprisonment. If he was arrested a second time and then martyred, that would account for the change of mood. When he's in prison the first time and he's writing some of those letters, they're pretty positive. I'm about to come see you. Will you get your house ready? Then the second one that he's writing in prison, where I ain't going to make it out of here. That shows why. One time he's in hopes of getting out. The next time he knows he's not. It was brought about by the Palestinian Jews. Remember when they accused him of what they did in Jerusalem and they moved him to Caesarea? All of us called the Jews. The second one's by the Romans. Probably speculation on exactly what happened then, but it's probably what happened. The different move was due to the emperor himself. When he was arrested the first time, brought in there evidently, and you know, history says Nero was not always so hateful against Christians. In his early days, he wasn't. In his latter days, he had to blame them for the fire that everybody else says he set. You know, it's kind of what's going on in America. We got to tear down the country so we can rebuild it like we want it. Ain't that what they're doing? I mean, that's it, right? The Great Reset? You know, even Tacitus, a historian that was living at the time that happened, he said, you know, they didn't agree with it. I got a quote in here I'm going to read in just a minute. He said, well, absolutely, he'd want to set the place afire. Why? Because he wanted urban renewal. Doesn't that sound like us? We got to destroy everything. If you destroy everything, how are you going to build anything back? You need to start building something back before you destroy it all, right? Hello? Anyway. I won't read all this, but that'll be in there if you want to read it. He does a really good job, and he follows along with what the Scripture says according to what's actually recorded in Acts. One explanation for the, some try to say that the reason was that Paul was killed on the first imprisonment, and that's why Luke didn't talk about it. We don't have any proof of that. That's speculation. Some say that's it, and some say they had to release him after 2 years because the statute of limitations said, oh, if it goes 2 years, there ain't no proof of that either. That's speculation, but think he was released, absolutely. There's an assumption that Paul was released in Rome, that events preferred to Pastor took place later in his ministry. After he's released from prison, he goes back out there for at least 4 years, maybe 5 years, and he's doing these other things, and he's writing 1st, 2nd Timothy, and Titus. From a totally different place, from a totally different worldview or a world situation. It's possible that these mentioned details from Paul's ministry that Luke didn't cover. Luke didn't know everything, and Luke didn't talk about everything. You know, he just hit the high spots. Some things we know absolutely, he just didn't talk about. Someone placed these during the first Roman imprisonment, and we have some of the letters that we're pretty sure that's exactly when he wrote them. Now, the martyrdom of Paul. Tradition is, even the leftist liberals, everybody agrees that Nero killed him, all right? That's kind of across the board. Everybody understands Nero killed himself in 68, but they said he's the one who had Paul beheaded, maybe as late as 67. Couldn't be a lot earlier, according to Clement and all these other things that are being done. Exactly when that was, uncertain. We're not sure. Eusebius, again, a historian, a bishop of Caesarea, and this is when he lived. This is what he said. He said he wrote this during his second Roman imprisonment, and he noted how Paul had indicated in the epistle that he wasn't going to make it out. In his letter, he's pretty much indicating, I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it out. Again, how close is he to the situation? He's referring to that when Paul said, I fought the good fight. Man, it's about to be over. I ain't going to make it. I ain't going to make it out. He's talking about this thing is over. Go back and read the letter, and you can see it if you just pay attention. Slow down a little bit. Read it. Number one, read it. You know, I'll hurry up and shorten this a little bit. The fire broke out in about 64 in Rome. Tacitus, who was a rhetorician and a historian, is there alive and writing about it. Pretty much everybody says Caesar set the town on fire himself. Matter of fact, it says that he recorded that they had the guards running through towns with firebrands, starting the fires, and even get real specific in order to places that he started the fires. And that the emperor himself had ordered the burning of the city to make way for urban renewal. Isn't that right? We're going to quit making gas cars so everybody have to use electricity. But you can't charge your cars if you're living in California, right? Any of y'all in California? Ain't that crazy? Oh, you all got to buy cars, but you can't. You're going to cause a blackout if all you charge your cars at the same time. How smart is that? You may be for electric cars. It'd be fine if you can afford it. What does an electric car cost? A total electric car. I don't have a clue. Huh? I'd say it would be probably more than a cheap gas car, eh? Anyway, you can figure that out on your own, all right? He was the one. I got to blame somebody, so he goes and gets the Christians and blames them. They're the ones who started the fire. They're the reason it's burned down. You know, we do have a quote in one place where it says he was fiddling on the roof while Rome burned, and he was the one burning it. So he goes and gets it, and he grips all the Christians, and he blames them for it. They start killing them. And he actually soaks them in a burning solution and puts them up on stakes and lights up the city with Christians, kills them. I mean, it's in the history. It's there. Arrested, some were sentenced, some were executed in a bad way. And this is what, let's see, where's that quote? Where is it? I'm going to save that little bit of time for you. Here it is. He didn't like Christians, okay? This is what he called them. Pestilent lot, loathed for their vices. He didn't like them. But this is what he says. He records it. Still, he noted that the Roman populace were rightly revolted by the excesses of Nero's ferocity against the Christians. Even the Romans said, this is crazy. Why? Because he blamed them. Probably, I'm speculating, if that was going on, Paul was still alive. It's known he was a ringleader of the Christians. Man, he might be a leader later on, so we got to do away with him. Even though they might not have any judicial stuff holding on him still, they're going to kill him because he's a main person. So Nero has him killed. And then just later, shortly later, he kills himself. That's what happened to him. Everybody says, you know, Nero beheaded him in Rome. But here's the good thing. What he left us. You know, when's the last time you just kind of went through those letters? You know, everybody calls him a round character. You know what that means, right? Remember what Paul said about himself? He says, I become all things to all men that I might win some. It doesn't mean he becomes a gay to reach gays or a lesbian to reach lesbians or an alcoholic to reach alcoholics. That's not what that means. A lot of people say, well, that's what it means. No, it doesn't mean that. He pays attention to the Gentiles' lifestyle and the Jews' lifestyle, and he do whatever he can without compromising so that he can reach them. And that's exactly what he did. You can see it. We saw it even in the book of Acts. He saw himself as an apostle. He was a theologian? Oh, absolutely. He saw himself as a pastor. He talks about that as he's leading the church. His theology was greatly influenced by his commitment to Christ and his experience. You know, that's one of the things that stood out when Jordan was talking. And that he admitted it. That he saw it early on in his life that he was, you know, it's like this. I don't know if it's still that way, but in some more independent churches, everybody in the church would automatically take on the convictions of the pastor. It wasn't their conviction. You know, if he gets up and says, you can't have a TV in your house, they don't have that conviction, but they just go do it. You see what I'm talking about? That's what Jordan's talking about. He said, listen, until you've lived out that experience and you know it yourself, don't even try to own it. He said, that's what all these people do. They come along and they spew this out. And he said, I did it for years, and then I realized I need to be careful. And that's when I really became conscious of the words that I was saying, and I wanted to work on them harder and use the right words that were my words that would explain. not just borrowing some cliche from somebody else. And that's exactly what. From his experience. What do you learn from your experience? Have you learned anything? Sometimes people go through a lot of stuff. They don't learn a thing. Ain't that right? Romans, 1 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Timothy, Titus, Philemon. They're books that we can, that God gave him to pass down to us so that we can understand. You know, it's kind of funny when you start thinking about these letters. They were reading these letters aloud. Paul talks about it. In Philemon, it says it. They were intended for the congregation and addressed to the congregation. And they were read, number one, they were intended for everybody. Look at this part. Why would it be read aloud? How many people could read then? In the Old Testament, how many people could read? You remember in Chosen? Whenever Mary's going to read, and they were shocked that she knew how to read. It just wasn't common for ladies to be able to read. It wasn't common for a lot of people. So he reads it out loud. Why? Here's the amazing thing about it. The oral presentation was a necessity. Look what Colossians says. After this letter has been read to you, it is also read to the church of Laodiceans, and that you in turn read the letter from Laodicea. Now, we don't have that letter, so that's one that was lost. We don't have everything that was done. Incidentally, the Colossian passage reminds us that we do not have all of those. Paul's letters were intended to be read aloud. Look what he includes in them. Hymns, confessions of faith. What? You're teaching people while you're reading something out loud? You know, Alexander McLaren, a great old preacher from 200 years ago, this is what he said. He said, before I preach through a book, and he was an expository preacher, he would preach through a book. He said, before I preach through the book of Leviticus, I read it out loud 50 times. Try that. Try reading in Leviticus out loud 50 times. If we even read it, what happens when you read it out loud? Can you imagine? All these people there, they can't read. So what is he doing? He's including theology. He's including all kind of things in the very words. They still do it all over the world now from a missionary perspective. What do? They teach through a story. Why? Because the people can't read a lot of them. So isn't that exactly what happens down at the fairgrounds? What do they call it? What do they call it? The pictory thing? Wordless. Yeah, the same thing they're doing it right now. So, you know, when you think about these letters, most of us can read them. They couldn't read them. They would read them and all the stuff. You know, this is the thing that bothers me the most when I think about this is when you look at the old hymns in our hymn books, they were full of theology. Hark the herald angels sing. All just read them sometimes. Just the words in them are theology. What an indictment it is against us to all this cheap surface contemporary Christian music we have now that has no theology in it whatsoever. I like Christian music, some of it, but some of it is just, I don't know. There's nothing in it. Well, it might sound good and have a good tune, okay, but this stuff, it was chock full because he was teaching people every time it was repeated. You know what that means? It's worth us reading. It's worth us studying. He taught it because the people couldn't read. He read the letter. They said, read it to the people and then send it on somewhere else and let them read it. You know what it means? God's in control. God said, I'm not done with you, Peter. I'm not done with you, Paul. You're not going to die in Rome. I'm going to get you out of there, and you got to go to these other places. And then he was killed. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, in his book, A Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, he says he was enduring all the horrors in one of the Soviet prison camps. And one day he was praying with his eyes closed. And when a fellow prisoner notices that he's praying with ridicule, he says to him, prayers won't help you get out of here any faster. His response was, opening his eyes, Ivan answered, I don't pray to get out of the prison. I just pray to do the will of God. Was it the will of God for Paul to die? Not on the first Roman imprisonment. He had some other stuff he needed to do. What does that mean? God's still in control. We're out of time. You know, let's be honest. How often do we live out practical atheism? We say we believe in Jesus and we trust him, but we manipulate the stuff for us. Be honest. Well, I can't wait on God to fix this. I got to go. Well, you're supposed to do your part. But we act like, oh, we say we love God and we trust God and we have faith in God, but we act like it's every bit up to us. That's practical atheism. Paul didn't live it. He said, nope, I'm going to trust you. And he did, and we have all this that God saved for us. And it's still good today. Let's pray. Lord, thank you that what you did in the life of Paul, not only for the sake of those in the first century, but for us, how true those words are in those letters, as if you were walking down the aisle or Paul were walking down the aisle speaking them today. Father, help us not take for granted that we can read. Help us not take for granted that we have all these resources at our fingertips that we can read them. Help us exercise it so that it would help move us closer to you and that you could use us to bring glory to yourself. In Jesus' name, amen.